This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Time to give you a look at some of the turning points that spelled defeat for the Cowboys yesterday, 24-22, and now they are tied atop the NFC East. How about Doug Peterson today? I know the sky is falling outside. It's falling, and I get that, and the fans are real. We're going down to Dallas. Our guys are going to be ready, and we're going to win that football game. And when we do, we are in first place in the NFC East. Wow, that's quite a statement right there. And I'm not sure what to make of it. Obviously, Jason Garrett does not think it's a good idea to say things like that. I don't think it's going to benefit the Cowboys in any way that Doug said that to you.
I think whether you say it or not, I think that has to be the mentality for both these teams. Now, the NFL can get wild, and it could turn out that whoever wins this game doesn't win the NFC East. But I think at this point in the season, with where both of them are right this second, holy cow, that's an important game.
Yeah.
To not only, hey, I want to be in first place in the NFC East, but just to say, hey, the sky is not falling. For the Cowboys, that would be four in a row. For the Eagles, they just got run by the Vikings. Your fan base needs it. Your players probably need it. It's just, it's a massive, massive game.
So the focus hugely for the Cowboys becomes just the health, right? Tyron, Lyle Collins, Amari Cooper, put those guys in the game. I'm confident they'll beat the Eagles one out of two times, and the one would likely be at home. But still, it's going to be tough. Minnesota really looked good, though, attacking that secondary, and I think that's your opportunity. We shall see. There will be plenty of time to talk about that ahead. Let's a little bit more thoroughly examine the road to defeat, the turning points, the Jets' second possession. They go on a 14-play drive, Malik Collins, horse collar and an encroachment. Four total penalties on the Cowboys on that drive. I mean,
so Malik, if I'm remembering the play right, this is down by the goal line, right?
Does he think Darnold's going to get in if he doesn't do it?
That's the only way.
And he wasn't.
That's the only way you could explain that. Because
he's going to get stopped 3 yards short.
If that's the way you're seeing it in that moment, then it actually makes sense. It's one of those things where it's like, I have to stop the touchdown. We're going to have to stop them on the next three plays. Got to do it. But it did look like you had a linebacker coming that was going to be able to stop him. So that's just bad awareness.
Yeah, it was bad. It felt bad, too, because the Jets were getting positive gains in the air, and it was like, holy cow, how is this happening? They didn't even have to run the ball that well. And Tony was talking about how Greg Williams is, you know, really good at frustrating opposing quarterbacks that haven't seen him. And right then, to me, it felt like, oh, boy, if the Cowboys win, this is going to be a major dogfight.
Yeah, and I just – the thing that pops into my head when we say Malik Collins is we were wrong. He's not a breakout player. He's just a guy in the NFL.
It's impressive how badass you can look in training camp in so many ways. Those young wide receivers that ended up not even making the team. Malik Collins looked so disruptive, like a force of nature.
And for the Doughboys, they needed him to step up and be a player this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happens every year, and it's hard not to because you're without football for so long. But we go out to training camp, and on the way out there, we're like, now, of course, you're not going to really take anything out of this. But then you watch them, and you start taking things out of it. It's like, stop.
Yeah.
It's spring training.
I'm not going to practice next year. I'm
going to go, and I'm going to go in there with the mentality of, it doesn't really matter. This does not project to what's going to happen during the season. And then I'll do segments on who's going to be the breakout player.
They look really good. We were right on Michael Gallup, although he wasn't
three drops.
That awesome. Yeah, that was unfortunate. Midway second quarter, the next turning point, though. Cowboys in the red zone, and they go for it on the fourth and two. An option run, it looked like, maybe with Dak, and it was brutal. Tony said he felt like the Jets defense knew what the Cowboys were going to do.
If you never played Tecmo Bowl, if you're not like 40 years old, that's how Tecmo Bowl works if they pick your play.
Yeah, you just get squashed.
Just six guys come free, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And then it ended up being a swing of 10 to 14 points because Robbie Anderson, 92 yards on the very next play.
And just looking at the way that looked when they lined up, I wish Dak would have stepped back, put one hand across his other hand up top there, perpendicular-like, and said, timeout. We need another play. Broadus, I've been texting with Broadus because he's like, well, if you know you need your right tackle to kind of make that block on Quinnen Williams, he's got to reach him and get there. And he sent a little clip where he's like, I don't think that's too much to ask. And I think you could go through on that play and one by one say, I don't think that's too much to ask. But the whole of it was just so many guys on the left side where you're running and you've got to get a cutoff and you two have got to cut this guy off and then get to this linebacker. And Jason Witten's got to seal a guy out by himself. And then your left tackle's got to make a block. And you have to do it all well enough that Ezekiel Elliott has a clean shot to get to his guy and make a block. Then you got a chance.
Yeah, there needs to be.
Man, that's a lot to
add. I don't think Dak can see pre-snap stuff. I think
and if not, you have a big problem.
That's what I believe at this point in his career. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he can see before the ball is snapped what actually is going to happen with the defense.
That would be unbelievable because in some of those situations, it's like it's just counting. And there's six guys over there.
Yeah, it was a lot of bodies to think that you were going to make it through there. You need to call a timeout, call a different play.
I think I agree with Mike that for whatever reason, sufficient adjustments aren't being made.
Yeah.
Either he can't, he hasn't been empowered to, or they're sending him up there with two different calls and it needs to be more just wide open freedom to calling the perfect play instead of deciding between two.
And I would like to acknowledge a couple of the Autoflex Leasing fan texters who are like, you think you could do a better job? The answer is no. I don't think that I know anything about blocking schemes. I don't think that I know anything about route combinations and actually calling an offense, but there are plenty of things that you can look at and say, that wasn't going to work, and here's why. And on that play, like I think here's where Jason Garrett gets in trouble, and there's probably a lot of other old-school NFL coaches who get in trouble here. When they're lining up to run that play, I think Jason Garrett would look at that pre-snap and say it's going to work. And you would say, how? And he would break out his laser pointer, and he would say, he makes this reach block. He makes this reach block on a double team. He climbs to the second level. He's going to block this linebacker. Witten's going to kick out this defensive end. That leaves Zeke with this safety. He's going to clean up that safety. And we've got 2 yards. The free safety shouldn't be able to get there before we get 2 yards. And my response to that is, because that's the reason that a lot of old school coaches don't mind 7 blockers versus 8 defenders. What they say is we're bringing in more guys to make the defense account for more gaps to give us another opportunity. I think a lot of the newer thought, which I totally agree with, is you're also now creating more and more matchups that if you lose one of them, your play's dead.
Yeah, it's been blown up.
On the front side there, you needed people backed to win on the backside, and then you needed 4 blockers to win on one side of the field just to give Zeke a chance to make his block to have a chance.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot to go wrong, whereas they view it as, we just have to execute it.
I do agree with 214 who says, as the head coach of this team, yes. Like, you wouldn't be a good offensive line coach. You might not be a good wide receivers coach or offensive coordinator. We would stay out of the way and let maybe some of the smart people do things that are innovative.
I mean, it's tough. I some of you out there on the text, I think what's the hurdle is you ask, you think you could do any better? You want to believe that your Cowboys coaching staff is at the top of their game and they're doing everything in their power because they're career professionals at this. It's hard to imagine that somebody on the radio who's been watching film with a scout for the last 5 years could possibly know more, but that's the sort of academic gap that exists right now between the old school and what is mathematically proven to be optimal. And yes, Jeff can have significantly more sophisticated ideas when it comes to scoring, just like you can. Pretty much all you have to do right now is Google it. It is that bad how, because football is so entrenched in history and the good old boy culture, that crossing your arms and saying those young nerds don't know nothing has created this advantage for the teams that are actually paying attention to the stuff that Jeff is. And by the way, those teams are named the New England Patriots, the New Orleans Saints, the LA Rams, the Philadelphia Eagles, the teams that have been winning more than not over the last 3 to 4 years. But I get it. I get you listening to the radio and going, ha, this kid actually thinks he knows more than Jason Garrett. That's the unfortunate reality. But it's also an amazing opportunity for the teams that are willing to jump ahead, as the Oakland A's have done, right? Yeah, they're like, oh, hey, you know, we're better at evaluating and actually implementing a lot of this stuff. And the reason they've had such a tremendous advantage is they have been outthinking and out-innovating when it comes to using data to drive decisions instead of traditional thinking. I mean, it's really unbelievable, and I say it with all due respect because I used to be like that. I used to think, oh, man, there's no way you actually know more. But a money ball thing is happening in a major way right now in football, and in real time, we're watching really smart, outdated football people struggle to come into the 21st century on this. Okay, we need to get to the other turning points, though. The next turning point, right before half, Brett Maher nailed a 62-yarder to make it a two-score game. How awesome was that? 21-6. At the half, and you're thinking, okay.
It gave me hope.
Yeah.
It really did. And then the start of the second half gave me hope. It was like, okay, you played terribly to start the game. You had an awful first half, and a bad football team scored a bunch of points on you. But like what happens in a lot of college games, a team can hang around for a while, and they can go up. But generally, the caliber of player on the other team is going to prove out over the second half. And I was like, there's enough time for this. This could happen. And after that field goal in the start of the third quarter, I actually believed it.
Okay, but then you talk about the start of that third quarter and the Cowboys go on a monster drive, and then Witten called for a pick play. Just unbelievable development there, taking a touchdown off the board, a four-point swing as you lose by two. It was gut-wrenching.
Wasn't Wilson called for the pick play?
Oh, yeah, Wilson, the pick play.
And Witten caught the touchdown.
Witten benefited from it.
Yeah.
Was it a pick play?
That was a bad call.
Yeah.
That was a bad call. But I don't think you can throw your challenge there, because at that point you had all three timeouts and you might have needed them. Now your head coach was going to throw one away later and ruin having all three. He was going
to screw
up.
There would have to be zero contact for it to get overturned, I think. I think Jason Garrett had that right.
Yes.
Like, it's not 100% obvious.
I just watched the Kansas City Chiefs game hours before, and Travis Kelce did one way worse that they didn't call. And they're just not going to overturn anything. In fact, I like what Jason Garrett said, not much of what he said, but early on with Sean and RJ this morning, he said, look, we've been told, don't really challenge these. We're not changing them.
Yeah, good adjustment there in the off week or the time between games. Okay, failed turning point, the Jordan Lewis INT, deep in Cowboys territory. Cowboys couldn't convert, though. Had a missed field goal by Maher. You can't be too tough on the guy after he makes a 62-yarder if he's going to miss a 51. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Then Quinn got another sack. The Jets were driving. And it set up a long third and long for them with 11:30 to go in the fourth quarter, and the Cowboys get the ball back down 12 there, thanks in part to the Robert Quinn sack. And then a huge pickup by Witten on third and nine to get down to the Jets 24. Zeke went in four plays later for a touchdown. He went over 100 yards, and there it was with 6:30 to play. The Cowboys were trailing just 21-16, and at that point I'm thinking, okay, I don't think the Cowboys are going to win, but it's definitely possible. And then the weirdest set of turning points that I think you'll ever see, the six straight plays with flags. I don't even
remember.
I remember a first and 27 from the 29-yard line, and then all of a sudden there's a pass interference.
And we got first and 10.
Automatic first down. And
yeah, you got that first down. And then the Zeke run that also had they declined a penalty. And then you had another pass interference. And then you had another. No, then it was a Dallas penalty for holding. And then you had a penalty on Gallup blocking the back. That was, oh my. And then you had defensive pass interference on the first and 27.
It was insane.
It was so absurd.
I was like, it's over, it's over. And it was like, no, it's not. It kept going. I was like, wow, this is insane. Three straight plays with penalties. Wow, this is insane. You'll never see this again. Four straight plays with penalties and on and on.
And then comes the play that, to me, maybe it's not a huge deal because, I don't know, but it could be. Because then you get to where it was third and two. He throws it to Zeke. Zeke gets tackled with like 51 seconds left in the game. You got all three timeouts, and you're going to be on the inside the 10-yard line. After he threw it to Zeke, you're going to be on the four, I believe. Yeah, so you're going to be on the four-yard line, and there's about 51 seconds left. A few seconds run off, and they call a timeout. And immediately I went, why? Like, this makes no sense, right?
Tony Romo had just said they were doing the right thing by not calling timeout.
Right. I don't need 47 seconds to score. No. I just got a first down.
Yeah.
I have three plays and plenty of time on the clock. And if I can score quickly, I have all three timeouts to get the ball back.
If you want to panic, let 20 seconds run off the clock and then call timeout.
Yes, because the only reason you would call a timeout that I can think of, and I think Skin's got a great theory from Crosstalk, where it's just like, I think Jason Garrett is like, all right, let's breathe.
Yeah.
You know, let's figure this out.
He nailed that, I thought.
And let's breathe.
Great.
Because by using it, your thought would be, okay, there's 40-something seconds left. Maybe he's using a timeout to preserve clock, but the only reason you would preserve clock would be to try to get the ball back later. And now at 47 seconds with two timeouts left, you can't do that. So that can't be the purpose because it's not possible. So you're literally calling a timeout for no reason to not have three timeouts and not be able to get the ball back.
This was after maddeningly passing it way too much, I thought, in that drive. They should have been running it.
So I give Jason Garrett a lot of passes because his team has won 10 games and won division titles a lot where you give him passes. But at this point, you're not calling the plays on offense. You don't deal with the defense. So you're part of game planning and motivation and then game management. 2 weeks in a row, you've massively failed at game management at the only time that it matters. Once before the two-minute warning, and now with 47 seconds left, you've taken away an opportunity from your team to win a football game.
Yeah.
And then you're calling timeouts while they're kneeling.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
What is that?
He wants to reset. I mean, he wants these. But it's also a way of putting it back on the players. You got to execute now. You know, we're gonna reset it up here and call this play, and you execute it, and boom, we win. When, dude, just geniusly letting the clock run out. There's a lot of things that you could go to as far as this game, but some of the common themes that pop up when it comes to the coaching staff are so frustrating. We'll get eventually in midweek to talking about how the injuries played a big part and how the defense is so much more important right now than the play calling. And once the tackles get back and the wide receiver gets back, they're going to start scoring points, but it's going to be all for naught because their opportunity was now, and it very much has slipped through their fingers. Mike Fisher is set to join us. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. The great Mike Fisher is next in the nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time to catch up with Mike Fisher, who is back from New York, scene of the crime last night. It's winning time. Let's get you $1,000. Cheer you up here on a Cowboys Monday, because it pays to turn it on, leave it on. Each hour is part of our national contest. We're giving you a chance to win $1,000. The word for this hour is dress, D-R-E-S-S. Text the word dress to 72881. Your next chance to win a grand is coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Mike Fisher is brought to you by Mark Rubin, 800 Lawyers. If credit card companies are blowing up your phone, do what more fan listeners do. Make the free call to Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS. He'll stop all the harassing collection calls and stress. Our guy Mark Rubin, 800 Lawyers, official lawyers of the Tolo, Rubin and Associates. And a good afternoon, Fish. How you doing?
Yeah, it's kind of a frumpy day in Frisco.
Is that right? Yeah, it doesn't feel too good right now, does it?
It's kind of cloudy and everybody's just wearing hoodies, and everybody just wants to take a nap. That's what Frisco's like today. Of course, some people would say that the Cowboys already got their nap in yesterday between 3:30 and 6:30.
Well, definitely between 3 and 5.
Okay, so I have a programming question for you. Well, first of all, I have a programming note.
Fire.
RJ Choppy is under the weather, and so I will be sitting in with Sean Sharif tomorrow morning. So that'll be a Sean and Fish edition of the morning show featuring, of course, Jerry Jones at 8:30. So I'm looking forward to having a round table. You know, as much as I talk and dominate, and then Sean, you know, he's a big bully. I don't know if Jerry's even going to be able to get a word in edgewise, but we'll see what happens.
Two bulls throwing at his head.
I think Jerry might get a couple words in.
I think he's probably got some things to say, especially after today. After last night, because of what I want to ask you guys about show prep. So Gavin Dawson and you guys too, I know. I mean, you start, it's a 20-hour workday in a way to host a radio show, right?
Agreed? Yeah, you know what it's like, Fish. You've done this before. It never really ends. You're always kind of prepping. You know.
So is there more to unpack after a loss, more to talk about and unpack and organize, or after a win?
Loss.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
content-rich environment.
Yeah, and great. I mean, whoopee, content-rich environment.
I would say close games really help out. If you lose 42-0 or win 42-0, it's tough.
There you go. Because you don't analyze plays anymore in a 42-0. And in a 42-0 loss, you don't analyze plays either. You just analyze mood. And here we are, Cowboys for a second straight game in a way, and then a third straight game, obviously, overall with losses, to where it really was kind of 42-0, wasn't it?
Felt like it. Yeah.
And I'm hearing a lot of people today trying to give credit, and maybe this is a pro-Garrett thing, and ultimately, when his time here is done, and it will be done sometime, I think one of the things that gets to be his legacy is his team always did go hard for him. Although that seems to be reduced now to be, well, they go hard for him in second halves, which isn't good enough. But I don't like hearing that, hey, you got to give a lot of credit to the Cowboys for fighting, or got to give a lot of credit for Dak Prescott for he got knocked down and he got up. What's he supposed to do? He can't just lay there.
Well, he is tough for taking those hits, man.
No doubt. And I'm not questioning or doubting his toughness at all. I guess I'm leaning towards Tank. What Tank Lawrence said in the locker room afterwards was, this is what we signed up for. I mean, so that's why I'm not going to talk about my injuries is what he's trying to say. This is part of the deal. And by the way, same thing with guys missing. I heard Brad Sham this morning. I think it was Troy Hughes that did a really entertaining kind of cut up of what Brad and Babe had to say. And both Brad and Babe said something to the effect of, I don't like the word should have. I don't like the phrase should have. Like the Cowboys should have beaten the Jets. And I get – and they're the best. So I get what they're saying. But I can say you should not fall behind teams 21-3. We could say that, can't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like you shouldn't fall behind anybody 21-3.
I mean, I would say if you're favored to win, you should win that game.
Yeah, but that's 10 points better than last week. They improved by 10 points.
Like the ball's got points on it. So the ball can bounce wrong. But it can't bounce wrong 21-3 against a team. Not only are the Jets bad and lacking in talent, and they are lacking in talent. They're lacking in developed talent. Because Sam Arnold, Jeff, has talent, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't have developed talent.
I'd argue they have a better defense than we do.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't. Personnel?
Yeah, I do. I think they're better.
Okay, I mean, that's...
Listen. Not a lot. I think it's close. But yeah, I think safety-wise, they're better.
They got two better situation, safeties for sure.
They're average with us. I think we don't even have defensive tackles really on the football team.
Okay,
so,
Mike, I'll say this. This leads to another conversation that we can maybe expand on over the course of the week. Maybe one of the problems around here from Jerry Jones, who, by the way, I'll be co-hosting with Sean Sharif tomorrow on the Jerry Jones Show, on down, including us, maybe we overrate the Dallas Cowboys.
100%.
Individually, maybe we overrate the coaches, and maybe the coaches overrate the players.
I think the offense is hurt and is being handicapped by bad coaching. I think we definitely overrated the hell out of this defense.
Okay, let me go to the offense for a moment. But the Jets were playing without their tight end. I think one of their starting offensive linemen went out of the game. They're playing with journeyman at best wide receivers, and they're playing with a quarterback. The quarterback was wearing special padding in case he got hit in one of his internal organs because he just came off mono. So, and their coach sucks by reputation. So by reputation, they have a bad coaching staff, an injured team, and a team that maybe most devastating of all in the NFL. They should have no idea how to win because they've never done it.
Yeah.
There's nobody on that roster who's been an NFL that off the top of my head, correct me if I'm wrong, who's been an NFL winner. Demaryius Thomas is on that roster. He's been an NFL winner.
There you go.
There's one. Maybe there's another. And so, maybe I'm overrating how important that is. But go through, and we can do this offensively or defensively, but rattle me through. I thought Leighton Vander Esch was on the verge of greatness.
Not anymore.
We thought Xavier Woods was on the verge to – he's going to the Pro Bowl.
Been kind of invisible the last month or so.
We thought that Byron Jones was not only going to have another Pro Bowl year, but that Cheeto was right behind him.
How hurt is Byron Jones, Fish?
He did come up lame in that game. We'll have to monitor that. Jason Garrett today at 4 o'clock, I'm sure we'll address some of that. And then, by the way, the Amari Cooper thing. And I'm not saying injuries aren't valid reasons. Amari Cooper being lost for the game basically on that first series, that changes what you can do. So now I don't have Cooper, and I don't have Cobb, and I don't have Tyron, and I don't have Lyle Collins. But the Jets didn't have any of those guys either.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, they scored 22 points and they averaged 23 last year. That's enough. It's letting that pathetic Jets offensive line rack up 24 points against you that lost you that game yesterday, Fish.
And you don't take advantage in the right way of the lone takeaway that you get. Here's what's freaky about what the Cowboys did. In combined offense, defense, and special teams, because let's not forget, they missed a field goal. That kind of would have made a difference. Like all time, a team that racks up those kind of numbers that the Cowboys racked up yesterday on offense, and you mentioned the scoring, which is enough, and no turnovers, right?
Yeah, no turnovers.
And Zeke, I thought Zeke was outstanding, and their conversion rate on third down was terrific, and their time of possession. I mean, you never lose if you win all those. They won every category, and they still lost. And you can call that fluky, if you want to, or you can say that's a trademark of this 10-year regime, which is, we're almost did it.
Is there anything that would result in a Jason Garrett midseason firing, in your opinion?
I suppose that there is some deep, hot, fiery, lava-infested trench of hell that the Cowboys could fall into in the regular season that would cause Jerry, who last night said, I'm not frustrated because it doesn't do any good to be frustrated. And what he really meant, I think, is I'm not going to show frustration, because obviously he's frustrated. So, you know, is there some effort against the Eagles that could cause you to say, okay, that's it? Well, Gavin, I guess if you really sense that the players quit, I'm not talking about Malik Collins declining to high-five Garrett when he comes off the field when the score is a million or nothing. I'm talking about really now, like what happened with Wade Phillips and what happens with many coaches. Hey, nothing against him. We're just out of gas for this guy. If that happened and you lost by a lopsided score against a division rival at home in a game in which if you win, you're in the driver's seat in the NFC East. I'm talking about this Sunday. Lose that game in an embarrassing fashion in which the players quit, and maybe now we've got something. But we all know, you guys have talked to both Jerry and Stephen plenty, that's not the way they want to do it. And okay, then I would ask you guys the same thing I said to Sean this morning, and Sean's made this point a couple times, I think. So fire Jason Garrett, and who are you going to put in his place? Kellen Moore, who keeps not being able to score? Chris Richard, who can't stop anybody? Or Rod Marinelli, who was 0-16 the last time he was the head coach.
Whichever one can pass your test for clock management is the one you make the head coach.
Okay, I would
argue
that.
Because this one's failing.
If that's your best reason to keep your head coach, that's not a good reason.
Yeah, I'd love to be in a job like that.
Yeah, the best reason I've got to keep the head coach
you're incompetent,
is
but I don't
he's, care. He's the most qualified person to be the head coach on the staff right now.
Okay.
And maybe that's not a good enough reason, but that's the best reason I've got. Can Kellen Moore clock manage?
I don't know. I don't know what he can do after Romo dimed out Jason Garrett for influencing the game plan.
By the way, with all due respect to Tony Romo, of course this is still Jason Garrett's playbook.
Well,
who thought it wasn't? It's still his team.
A lot of people.
Well, they were wrong. They need to really listen to more G-Bag Nation. Jason Garrett didn't turn the whole thing over. Jason Garrett doesn't run the defense here, but the defensive philosophy is still reflective of what Jason Garrett thinks. He's the head coach, and if you're going to go down, don't you want to go down with your hands on the steering wheel?
Sure looked after the Giant looked like after the Giants game they were going to go forward with modern principles, and the numbers have suggested that since week one, that has been going down and down every week. So they did make a change, Fish, and it was working quite well.
Well, the pre-snap motion and all the deception, was that in play yesterday very much?
Not much, and they ran a grand total of 6 play-action passes, so they went from about 40-something% to 7%.
right now. Can we – let's try to be fair. Because, listen, I just did a video. It'll be up on the Fan website momentarily about how I'm so sick of having to be Mr. Reasonable. I want to be like Bassick, man. I want to trade lives with you.
Come on. Let's see it.
What, live in reality? Yeah.
Call it a mic swap.
And say everything that means.
A mic swap. Let's do mic swap.
All right, dude. Let's book it.
We have to keep our respective wives, but I'll certainly take your kids. They're delightful.
They are delightful.
Bassick, I think Bassick, first of all, it's passionate and it's sincere and it's real, but you're mad.
Yeah, that's why Malik Collins, I understand. Malik Collins doesn't give his head coach five because he doesn't want five for failing. It wasn't that I'm showing you up or that I've quit on you. I know exactly why he didn't give him five. That's the great thing about having me on the radio. I'm the only human being in Dallas-Fort Worth that played professional sports, so I can come from a place that nobody else can come from.
Boom. In your face,
Mike Bassick. Well, it's not in my face because we're doing mic swap. At which time I'll be on the radio saying, I'm the only one in DFW media that played professional sports.
Ooh, bring it. I would like your impression of Bassick on air. That sounds entertaining. All right, have a good one. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. There he goes. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. And speaking of Bassick, baseball nuggets are coming up next.
Well, we'll talk baseball, but I do have an analogy for this defense. Right. Really, for this offense, according to baseball. We're like a baseball pitcher. Next.
Mesquite Mitsubishi has the brand new Outlander Sport. That is an SUV starting at $16,900. Visit mymitsu.com.
All right, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for Baseball Nuggets. Here's Bassick.
Okay, before we start off with baseball, I still want to talk football and the Dallas Cowboys because I've actually had this for a week and I haven't been able to use it during the show, and we have 5 hours, but figure I'll use my baseball analogy here for the Dallas Cowboys because, Gavin, I wanted to say this earlier. One of the things is you're very optimistic. You're very Jerry Jones, right? The Mavericks are going to make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Right? I mean that's –
You got it.
Right. They're going to – so, I mean, you're an optimistic guy before things start, and then as things play out, you're going to try to stay as optimistic as possible and see the positive out of everything until almost it becomes complete that it's not going to work out. And you'll say, I was wrong, but you're going to be optimistic in almost every situation that I've been with you for 7 years with sports. Jerry is the same way. One of the things that you've been very optimistic with this Cowboys team is the offense is moving the ball.
Yes.
And so here's my analogy with baseball. That would, to me, be saying, well, the pitcher gets to two strikes every time, but the pitcher's ERA is like 4. It's not bad. It's not good. It's kind of like...
Wouldn't it be more like getting a bunch of guys in scoring position, though?
And then not...
And not driving them in?
Either way. I guess I looked at it from a pitcher's perspective. But both ways, it's like, yeah, but we're getting runners on base. Or, yeah, but I'm getting to two strikes on almost every hitter. Well, I don't care that you got to two strikes. I care that you get him out. I care that you get the strikeout when we need the strikeout. To Jeff's point, the other side would be, yeah, that's good. You got a walk and a hit. Can one of you next two or three guys coming up actually knock them in so it actually counts for something? And so that's where I'm with the Cowboys offense. They are doing some things right. Just like pitchers can do things right to get to two strikes. That's nice.
Okay.
But ultimately, I need you to put the guy away.
I would say in response, typically when you're evaluating a process and how do we get better at achieving this goal, it's not focusing on the end result, but all the steps that go to it. Because in a small sample size over the course of a month or so, you can do a lot of right things, but not end up closing the deal, right? It just, you had bad luck. The prospective client had something pop up. And like, you're making great pitches, but they're not buying. So, I think 22 points missing both tackles in your star wide receiver isn't bad. The other two games, to have 5 combined turnovers is horrible, and those things aren't going to repeat themselves. Yeah. But your down in and down out efficiencies will eventually add up to points. Now, over the course of a 16-game season, that's part of what makes the NFL awesome. Yeah. It's unpredictable.
Yeah. And I guess I'm worried about this offense. I think the defense is worse. I'll put it this way.
No, me too.
What am I more worried about? I'm more worried about defense over offense with the Dallas Cowboys. But this offense had barely any points against the Miami Dolphins at halftime, had barely any points against the New Orleans Saints at halftime, had, if I'm correct, 3 points And then they had to make a 62-yarder this Sunday get to 6 points at halftime.
Unacceptable what's happening
in the first
half.
So all we're able to really do, and this is a credit to Dak, they're not quitting, they're trying hard, is when we're down by multiple scores, we're able to then score multiple times.
Yeah.
And so that's the scary part of this offense. When the other team is fresh and 100% with whoever they're playing out there, injuries aside, can we actually score on a team that's ready to play football early on, or do we have to have the situation where we only are able to score touchdowns if we're down by 14 points or so, because then things soften up just enough for us to then start making some nice plays?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, so they're showing up with the idea of this is how we're going to be successful, and it's not working for them at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so now moving on to baseball, and we'll get right back into Cowboys talk here in 10 minutes, is what a great series in the American League, and I was hoping to see these two heavyweights clash against each other. And the first game, the Yankees dominated, and it really wasn't total domination. If you go up against the New York Yankees and you give up 3 runs in 6 innings, I'll take that. Even from Zach Greinke,
you should win.
You have a good chance of winning, especially if you have offense on the other side. But the Astros are really struggling offensively in these playoffs. They've had the game one and somewhat game five where they've hit the ball pretty well. And game five, I gave it to Jeff, and I'm sure he talked about it on Friday. They actually knew what was coming. So they had a much better chance of getting runs on the board because now they knew when fastball was coming. Oh, yeah, we played that audio from Dan
Plesac. Did the Yankees think that was happening again? Because they had a super short leash on their starting pitcher.
On James Paxton.
Yeah, like as soon as he got in trouble, it was yank him.
I think they knew that if they win that game, and it goes to the National League, which is playing tonight, if you win the first two games on the road in a 7-game series.
Are they all 2-3-2 in baseball?
It's two. I'm pretty sure it's 2-2-1-1-1 in the AL and NLCSs. It's 2-3-2 in the World Series.
Okay.
Is you are 22 out of 25. So I think the Yankees, when I saw it that quick, I thought they thought, this is our opportunity. We took game one. If we can win game two, our chances of winning this series is over 90%. And so they have an unbelievable bullpen. That's their strength. Their strength isn't starting pitching. So I thought that could have been their case. I thought they looked at it as, we want to have it right here, right now. We want to win this game in the third inning. We want to be able to shut them out. And to that point, the bullpen went 7 2/3 with only giving up 1 run. Now, they end up giving up 2 runs because in the 11th inning, they get the solo shot. But that bullpen is awesome. The Astros, 3 hits, 0 runs in the first game. Yesterday, they win in 11 innings. Awesome game. They only got 7 hits and 3 runs.
Carlos Correa won that game.
Yeah.
The play he made defensively was freaking awesome too.
Oh,
the sixth inning,
the ball, yeah.
Altuve booted it,
yeah,
and Correa tracks it down and throws home for the third out of the inning. That was huge.
And here's the deal about using your relievers a lot, like the Yankees did, not in game one because they get 6 innings, but they use Ottavino in the first game. Well, then they need to use everybody in the second game because, like Jeff is saying, they took Paxton out after 2 1/3 innings, and they're like, we're going to go to our pen and try to win it now. We're going to win the next 7 innings of baseball with our bullpen. In the 5th inning, Ottavino in the 7th inning against Springer in game one goes cutter, slider. He gets him out on a fly ball. Well, Springer, this is about being smart and, you know, like, I'm going to take a shot here at Dez just because. Dez kind of outed himself yesterday on Twitter when he's like, yeah, we have useless, meaningless meetings. Well, I get it because you're super talented and you never wanted to actually study a whole bunch of football. You just wanted to go out and just beat everybody with pure talent. Just tell me the route I'm running, I'll run it, and I'll get open, and I'll be pure talent. But Springer takes in the information of game one against Ottavino and says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit on the pitch that he threw me the day before. So Springer sits on off speed, not on fastball, and he gets the pitch 5th inning. Bam, first pitch, home run. We're tied at 2. This is taking in information and using it as quickly as possible. Springer is a great player, but to be great, unless you're Josh Hamilton talented or Dez Bryant talented, you can do it based on pure talent. It will catch up to you in your early 30s way quicker than it'll catch up to guys that actually use their brain to also play the sport too. Now, next thing I want to go to in the series, Yordan Alvarez, super awesome 22-year-old rookie first baseman. we are seeing how you can get him out. Nobody could figure it out in the regular season. First of all, righty on lefty, because he's a lefty. You throw a good changeup down and away, he'll chase it a little bit, and he'll have a tough time staying back. He's trying to yank things away because he loves fastballs away that he can hit to center field into right field for home runs. He's a little bit pull happy right now. Also, if you can set him up as a lefty, he will chase down and away on your slider, and then he'll tie him up really hard inside. So lefties, if you know, you can pitch him in. This will be a problem for the Rangers for the next 6 years. So I'm actually watching Alvarez. Like, how the hell do you get him out? Because I couldn't figure out a way how to get him out watching Rangers versus him. But now that I'm watching, you know, quality pitching, Tampa Bay and New York, I'm seeing where his holes are. So they're getting exposed. And I'm wondering, with Correa hitting the big home run last night in the 11th and Yordan Alvarez not having a hit in the series, I'm wondering, will they move him out of fifth and move him down to seventh and move Correa, who's been in these games, who's won a World Series, will they move him up in the lineup a little bit? I go to the game tonight. It is a huge game for St. Louis. This is pretty much do or die. They're going to have to win tonight. Down 2-0 when you lose your first two games on the road is almost impossible to come back. You lose 3-0. We know it's only the Boston Red Sox in 2004 that's come back from that. Steven Strasburg has been, I would say, arguably their best pitcher in the playoffs until the NLCS started, because then Anibal Sanchez, their number four starting pitcher, goes 7 2/3 of no-hit baseball. And then Scherzer goes 6 innings of no-hit baseball the other night until giving up a hit to Goldschmidt in the seventh. The National League teams are worse than the Astros and the Yankees. But if I can get four quality starting pitchers like the Nationals have, they can upset one of these teams come World Series time, because it really is, come playoff time, a lot about your pitching.
Okay, we are going to step aside right here on a Cowboys Monday. There's some delicious playoff baseball nuggets. The Jason Garrett press conference is next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.